We're about to begin. Good day, everyone, and welcome to the IBM Informix Chat with the Labs conference call. Today's call is being recorded. There is a PowerPoint presentation that coordinates with this conference. If you do not have the presentation, you may go to www.ibm.com/Informix/webcasts to get the materials. At this time, for opening remarks and introductions, I would like to turn the call over to Jerry Kazee. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Hello, everybody. Hope all of you are ready for a good session today. I got a little bit of business I'd like to cover first, as usual. First of all, I want to thank all of you who came and participated at IDUG last week in Tampa. I thought the committee did a great job of planning and organizing the event, and there was a great turnout from the Informix community. I was down there Monday and Tuesday and was really excited with everything that I saw and heard, and I hope that you were equally pleased. So we've got IDUG behind us, and now we're busy planning the big Information on Demand conference in October in Anaheim. I think it's October 15th through the 20th. And, I guess I want to encourage you to start planning for it and planning on attending, but also to encourage you to consider participating in the event. Go to the website and consider submitting an abstract to potentially speak as well. So today, today's topic is IDS10, upgrading and new features. We've had a session on migrating to IDS10 before, early last year, and we thought that it would be good to do another session on that. First of all, to talk about how easy it is to migrate to version 10. But then also to focus on some of the work that we've done, since we actually shipped 10.0UC1. So we're getting ready to ship 10.0UC5 or XC5 here in the next couple weeks, and there's just a significant amount of work and progress that the team's made over the last 12 to 14 months since the initial release of 10.0, and we thought it would be a good time to update you on that. So today's speaker is Kevin Brown. Kevin Brown is a senior technical staff member here at IBM. He's also our IDS lead architect, and he'll take you through the migration process, and then we'll take a look at features that have been added to version 10 since the release. And then he'll do a brief update on the full content of 10.0. So with that, I'll turn it over to Kevin.
Thank you, Jerry. Welcome, everyone. So I sent out a set of slides. I hope everyone has that set of slides. One thing I'd like to do is maybe change the order of these slides a little bit. So we'll cover all the information that's here. However, I think probably what people are going to be most interested anyway is the new material, which is the new features that have been covered in 10, XC2 through XC5. So I thought I would start with those slides first and then do the migrating to 10 section second. So if you have the slides in front of you, if you could move to slide number 29, I think we'll start there. Slide 29 is a slide that's labeled New Features in 10.0 XC2. All right. So the main point of the XC2 release was that it's the first release that supported the IDS Express Edition. For those of you that aren't familiar with the Express Edition, the Express Edition a new version of IDS that's been added to the suite of IDS release versions. We now have the Express Edition, the Work Group Edition, and the Enterprise Edition. So just to cover the differences between the three, the Express Edition allows up to two CPUs, 4 gigabytes of memory, We disallow the use of HDR and enterprise replication. There's no parallel operation support and no 64-bit support. And it's only been available on Windows and Linux in 32-bit mode. The Workgroup Edition, IDS Workgroup, ups the number of CPUs from 2 to 4, ups the memory from 4 to 8 gigabytes. Your HDR is available, ER is available. You can do parallel queries, and 64-bit platforms are supported on all platforms. And finally, the Enterprise Edition is unlimited in all ways, unlimited CPUs, unlimited memory, HDR, ER, parallel, 64-bit, and it's available on all the platforms that that we support. The other point of the IDS Express Edition is that it's targeted to a lower price point for the SMB market. All right, so moving on to slide number 30, the new features in 10XC3. So in this release, one of the features that the first feature I'll talk about is ANSI joins and distributed queries. What we've done here is we have enhanced the ANSI joins to work better when they're performed in distributed queries. Previously, what would happen is that if you had a distributed query, say a query where you're selecting data, you're in a local server and you're selecting data from a remote server, and the data you're selecting from that remote server happens to do a join, the previous releases before XC3 would pull the data from the tables being joined from the remote server to the local server and do the ANSI join locally. Obviously, this is not the best performance-wise, and we've corrected this problem, and now the join is actually done on the remote machine, so the only data that will be returned is the result of the join. This can result in much better performance if you're doing distributed ANSI joins. Another feature we've added is XA compliance for external data sources. We've done this by adding a number of new support SQL statements into the database. We have create and drop XA data source statements. And what these statements do is they define how you reach an XA data source, how do you retrieve data from it. Once you've issued these statements, you're able to use this XA data source within your transactions. An example of this is the following feature we've added is the MQ Data Blade. With the MQ Data Blade, you are able to extract data from the MQ series, which is a separate product that you would purchase and put on your server. And what the MQ Data Blade does is allow you to read from those queues that are maintained by the MQ series product as if they were relational tables. And part of this is the ability to participate in XA transactions with the MQ server. So if you are reading data, you can transactionally, you're able to commit and roll back transactions in the database, and those transactions will be coordinated with reading or leaving the data on the queue that you were reading from. From a user's point of view, all they see is once you've installed the MQ Data Blade, all the user sees is a standard relational table in their database. But what the MQ Data Blade allows you to do is by reading from this virtual table, you're going to be retrieving data from the queue. Two different operations are supported for reading. You can do destructive reads or non-destructive reads, meaning that the data, when you read data from the table, a destructive read will read the data and remove it from the queue. Non-destructive will read the data and leave it on the queue. We found that there's quite a bit of interest in this data blade because the skills necessary in order to use the MQ series product you need to have quite a bit of expertise in order to use this product. By adding the MQ data blade, you're able to really simplify your ability to use and manage these queues on your database. You install MQ, you simply install the data blade in your database and create a virtual table through a few simple instructions, and now you're able to read and write data from the MQ series. The way the MQ series data blade is shipped, it comes with a database. However, it's not automatically installed into your database. What you need to do is a further step of once you've created your database, you need to install the MQ data blade into your database by hand. Another feature that we've added is the DB permission configuration parameter. So previously, we would allow any user to be able, the ability to create a database. We found that people were asking for us to be able to provide some limits on this, and so what we have done is added the DB create permission configuration parameter. If this value is set, then only the users that are mentioned in the DB create permission config variable can create databases. Now, user informix is always allowed to create databases, so there's no way to exclude the user informix, but you can add additional users through the use of this parameter. And if you want to have more than one user, you would just add this statement as your onconfig file multiple times. Another new config variable is the dumpter. The dumpter is where the IDS server is the directory is going to use to play shared memory dumps, messages from assertion failures, and so you these are things which you may not want everyone to use, be able to see. So what we have done is added the dumpter to be able to specify the directory that you can dump to. Previously, dumpter was had defaulted to /temp, which is a directory that is not always easy to set the permissions on. We decided that it would probably be much better to default this to informixter /temp on informix and %informixter %temp on Windows. These will automatically have the right permissions. And if you do not set the dumpter at all, then you are still going to have a level of security that you wouldn't otherwise have. All right, moving on to the next page, slide 31. We've also enhanced table level restore to support smart blobs. The support for smart blobs. Smart blobs is only available from level zero archive when you restore from level zero archive. Or previously, there was no way to restore these smart large objects. Moving on, AES cipher support. We've added that. We now support an XV3 cipher keys of 128, 192, and 256 bits. I'm not going to go into too much detail here. If you're interested in using this, you should see the IDS Administrator's Guide for more info. The Enterprise Replication now has several new commands for showing statistics. One of the commands is the CDR stats RQM. What this does is it shows information about the reliable queue manager. The stats that can be displayed include ACK send, control send sync, receive queue. It'll display how many transactions are currently queued in memory and how many are spooled, the size of data queue in memory, amount of real memory used, pending transaction buffers and data, max mem used, total number of transactions queued, and a number of other pieces of information. Another command is the stats receive command to CDR, and this shows the degree of parallelism in the receiver. And some of the information that's displayed is the transaction count, the number of pending and active transactions, maximum transactions that have been active, average number of pending and active transactions, and so on. One of the options to this command is to be able to name the server which you want the stats to be retrieved from. For instance, you can name a remote server. Another thing that's been added is the client SDK is now part of the IDS install. So you're able to install both IDS and the client SDK, IDS alone, or SDK by itself, all from the same install package. Previously, this was not possible. There's also enhanced support for retrieving subsets of queries. What this means is we've added a couple of new keywords for determining where in the result set you want to start retrieving data and how many rows you want to retrieve. Keywords are first and skip. The keyword first indicates the number of rows you want to return. Skip obviously returns tells the server how many rows to skip before starting to return rows. These two keywords can be used in conjunction with each other, so you can say something like skip 100, first 10, and that would skip the first 100 rows and then give you the following 10 rows. If you're using order by, the order by is going to be applied before first or skip. So you can do something like select star from some table, or order the results of that table and then apply the skip in the first. And one of the places this is quite useful is in web applications which want to retrieve pages of data. For instance, they may want to retrieve the first 50 rows and display them, then go back and get the next 50 rows, the next 50 rows. This gives you the ability to be able to do that quite easily. All right, moving on to slide number 32. Some other features we've added to XC3 are the ordering of subset of query results in collection-derived tables. So previously it was not possible to put an order by clause in a collection subquery. In addition, it also wasn't possible to use the order by with the first keyword in the projection clause. So we've removed these limitations, and now it is possible to use order bys in collection subqueries. Moving on, we've upgraded the J Foundation to use JRE 142. And this is due to the security problem was found with the previous version of JRE, so we've upgraded this. You'll see in later releases we have done this with other products as well. The ADT path configuration parameter has been changed to have a new default value. Similar to Dumpster, ADT path used a default to /temp. We decided that was probably not a good place to default to for security reasons, and so we've now default to $firmexdir/AAODIR. This directory is used for saving audit files. The things to be aware of is that you must be sure that the directory that you create has read-write permission by Informix, and also has enough room to keep all the data that is going to be kept there. We've also got the unsecure onstat. This parameter helps determine who can use onstat to view SQL statements. The onconfig parameter, if you set this onconfig parameter to 1, then anyone is able to see this information with onstat. Any other value will allow only the DBA to see the results. the onstat commands are affected are onstat minus SES, minus STM, minus SSC, and minus SQL. If anyone other than the DBA tries to set these and the value is not set to 1, then they will get an error back. They will not be able to see this information. This helps cover a security hole that we felt we had. All right, moving on to slide number 33. Talk about some of the features in 10XC4. First feature I'll talk about is the truncate table support. This command, as it says, allows rows to be quickly deleted from a table and its indexes. The reason that this is fast is because is faster than doing deletes is because the delete triggers are bypassed, and there's also no logical logging done. Now, one thing to mention is that if the table that you're truncating happens to contain user-defined types, then the command will still work. However, if the UDTs have assign and destroy functions, which is something that, you know, not all UDTs have, but if they do happen to have assign and destroy, then truncate will revert to being just a delete, and so each row will be deleted individually. As mentioned, the truncate command removes data from the table as well as the index. Doesn't, other than the caveat about UDTs, there's not any restrictions on the type of data that can be in the table. For instance, smart blobs are fully supported. One thing to be aware of also is that if the table being truncated is part of a hierarchy and is the super table, then you may want to use the only keyword. So truncate, the only keyword when applied to truncate says to only remove data from the super table, and none of the subtables will be affected. If you leave off the only keyword, then the super table and all subtables will be truncated. So that's something you definitely want to be aware of. ER replication synchronization. There's a new CER sync replicate command, which synchronizes data among replication servers and repairs inconsistent data within the replicate. The reference server is specified against which the other servers in the replicate can be compared. When differences are found, there's a couple of different options. You can either say, all the rows that are actually different will be corrected, with the caveat that if additional rows are found in the replicates being checked, you have an option to say new rows should be left as is. Alternatively, you can say new rows should be deleted. And the argument to do that is the minus keep argument. There is also a sync replicate set, which is identical, only it works with replicate sets rather than just replicates. If you're just interested in finding out how similar to replicas are, you can use the check replicate or check replicate set. It has similar functionality to the sync replicate command. The difference is that it will report any of the differences found rather than going ahead and correcting them. And it will print a table about what differences it found and what it would, and it gives you information about how it would go about fixing them. So moving on, we've enhanced support for IPv6. For those of you that may not be aware, IPv6 is another internet protocol. The IPv6 defines IP addresses to be 6 bytes IPv4, which is what probably most people are familiar with, is the usual 4-byte IP addresses. We've enhanced the server to be able to support either these 4-byte or 6-byte IP addresses. The way the server does this is when it comes up, it checks to see what support is available in the OS. It determines whether only 4 or both 4 and 6-byte IP addresses are supported. Now, to take advantage of IPv6, we've added there's a couple of ways that you can take advantage of this. One is to create DB server aliases, one using the 32-bit IP address, another server alias using the 6-byte IP address. And alternatively, in the SQL host, we've now added the syntax for the host name that if you put a star, the wildcard character, in front of the host name, it instructs IDS to listen to all IP addresses allowed by the OS. So if you have multiple hosts, some of which do support IPv6 and some which don't, you're always safe to put a star in there starting with XC4, and the server will do the right thing. We've also added the new security local connection config parameter. What this does is it gives you the ability to check whether or not the user that is issuing a command is who they say they are. There are three different levels of security that you can set this to, 0, 1, or 2. 0 is the default, and it says that you don't do the checking. 1 says to do the checking, and 2 does some additional checks. However, if you set it to 2, the only two net types that are supported are SOC TCP and IPC STIR. I notice here that I said DOC TCP rather than SOC, so that's a typo, but it should say SOC TCP there. All right, moving on to slide 34. Another feature that we've added is the ability to define secure data blade module paths with the DB library path config param. This defines the path that database that can be used to store the shared libraries that data blades use. If it's not set, then you can put your data blades in any directory in any directory that you wish. If it is set, then you're limited to use only the libraries the library paths that are defined by the DB library path configuration variable. The things to know there is that whatever directory you pick, it must be readable by a user in Formix. Moving on, we've improved in XC4 the parallel backup and restore. We're now more efficient. To enable this functionality, there's a new variable called barsortDBS. In order to enable this functionality, you'll need to set this variable to 1, and this will enable it. Typically, you will want to set this value to 1 in your onconfig file. We've also enhanced DB access with a minus A option. What this option does is tells DB access to process no further commands in a script if it encounters an error. Without the minus A, it's possible that you could have one transaction error out and would move on to the next transaction and continue to process commands in the script. This could lead to inconsistencies in your database. To eliminate this, the minus A will stop executing that script as soon as it receives any sort of error. We've also added support for the Tivoli Storage Manager to HP Itanium. This allows OnBar to use the Tivoli Storage Manager on Itanium. We've also added this IFX extend role configuration parameter. The IFX extend role is used to determine who can create and install user-defined functions in the database. If the value is set to 0, then it's not possible for anyone other than sorry, if the value is set to zero, anyone can install values in the can install data blades and user-defined functions into the database. If it's set to one, then the only people that can install these data blades are those that have been granted extend role by the administrator. This helps protect the database from doing malicious or accidental installations of faulty external functions. Okay, moving on to slide number 35. These are the new features that are found in XE5. I'll start out first with the some of the bug fixes that were important, and then I'll move on to the changes we've made in the to support the bond benchmark, which I think is something else that people are going to be interested in. Some of the things we fixed in XE5 are that the demo server now uses TCP instead of shared memory connections. This allows the demo database to be connected to from anywhere. Previously, you had to be on the same machine in order to connect to the demo database. With this change, now you can be on a remote machine and still be able to connect to the demo server. In addition, the demo server now also checks for the uniqueness of server num. One of the things that could happen previously is that if you had several instances on the same machine, that you could end up with two servers running with the same server num. This has been fixed so that during the install process, the server num that's generated is compared with the other server nums to make sure that it's unique, and if the server num is not unique, it will bump it up until it finds a unique value. We've also improved the silent install. One of the things here is that it's when you do the install, you have to specify the port number that you want the database to talk to. Now, if you're doing a non-silent install, the port number that's supplied by the user is checked against, on Unix, it would be checked against etc. services to see if that port was already in use. And if it was in use, the user would be told and a new port number would be suggested to which the user could use. However, the silent install would go through this process, and if it found that the one that the user supplied was already in use, it would silently pick a new port number and use that one. The problem was that the user would not have any indication that the port number had been changed. So with this change to silent install will log the change to the port number in a log.txt file, which will be in $inform/temp/log.txt. This way, the user can, after the install is through, the user can look at this file and see whether or not the port number has been changed. Another change, another feature enhancement on XE5 is that the MQ data blade is now supported on Linux 32, 32-bit, Linux P-Series 64-bit, and Solaris 64-bit. Previous to this, these platforms were not supported. This, of course, means that you would also have to get the corresponding MQ series blade running on your server, but that's no different than with previous releases. The MQ blade, though, it will now support MQ series running on these new platforms. As mentioned earlier, the JRE for ISA and ISMP has been upgraded to 1.42, and the reason for this was because of a security error found in previous JRE release. Now, one thing to say is that although there was a security issue with the previous release, it was not one that could be exercised directly by Informix. Still, what we felt was that if we were distributing a JRE that had the security problem, it was possible that someone might use it in some context other than IDS and run into this. And so we have corrected our installation to use the more secure 1.4.2 version of JRE. We've also added a new two new binary data types. There's a variable length binary type and a fixed length binary type. The fixed length binary type is fixed to 18 bytes. This support was put in specifically for the WebSphere portal team. And we have the facility to make other fixed length binary types and may do that in the future. However, for present, what we have is the one fixed type, which is 18 bytes. The variable length binary type can hold a maximum length of data of 255 bytes. The reason this value, this length was chosen was so that you could fit a reasonable number of binary data types onto a single 2K page. Another aspect of this binary type is that it is indexable. So if you have a column of data in your table, which is binary, the variable binary type, or a fixed length, the fixed length 18 binary type, you will be able to create an index on there. And again, that's something that the WebSphere team needed from us. In addition to the actual data type, there's a number of bitwise operations that are supported, such as and or, XOR, and NOT. And these are all provided with the data blade. This variable length binary and fixed binary types are going to be shipped with XC5. And as with the MQ data blade, in order to use them, you will need to install the blade by hand, meaning that if you create a database, you will not get these data types by default. You will have to register them as you would with any other data blade. All right. So we'll move on to the bond benchmark performance enhancements. Let's skip to slide 37. So the first thing that that I'll talk about is the improved performance of our internal latches. The problem that we had previously was that in some situations we want to check to see if a latch is currently being held by any users. And the way that we would try to determine this would be to actually grab the latch. If we were successful in grabbing it, then we knew that no one had previously had it, and then we could go ahead and release it. Although we would only hold this latch for a short amount of time, it turns out that in a heavily used system with many threads running simultaneously, it was quite possible that while we were holding it, that someone else might try to grab it, and because we were holding it, they'd end up blocking. It turns out that in this situation, it's completely unnecessary to acquire the latch in order to determine that someone's holding it, and instead, it makes a lot more sense to do a dirty read. You can read the latch if without grabbing it and determine whether or not someone actually has it. We found that this was a big performance increase by making this change. And this will be available in XC5. Another problem that we found is that we were doing a sequential scan of the user table on every prepared table, on every prepared statement. What we were trying to do is determine whether the user that was preparing the statement was a DBA. And in order to do this, we required a sequential scan of the sys users table. Now what we do is we maintain a cache of users with DBA privileges, and we look up the user in this cache rather than having to scan the sys users table. This performs much better, and it also does not impact the having to scan the sys users table at all. Another enhancement that we made that seems sort of obvious, but has made a big improvement in certain queries, is that if you're returning a single row, then and you've asked for an order by, there's no reason to actually have to go ahead and sort it because there's only one row. So now if there are zero or one rows to be returned, the sort package is not going to be initialized. And so you'll save all that overhead. This leads to performance improvements as well. Just a sec. I need to switch phones here because my phone is running out of power. All right. So that was one row. We don't sort on one row, yes. Another thing that we fixed is the polling performance for network connections. Previously, we used the older interfaces, such as select and poll, in order to determine whether or not there was any I/O, any data ready to be read on TCP sockets. These work perfectly well. However, there's newer interfaces in most operating systems which allow us to achieve the same functionality much more quickly. In order to get this new interface, there is a new config parameter called fastpoll. By default, fastpoll is not turned on. In order to take advantage of this, you'll have to set fastpoll equal to 1 in the config file. The operating system, even if you set it to use fastpoll, IDS will only use fastpoll if it's available on the machine that you're running on. Not all OSs support fastpolling. I've listed here that AIX does not support it. I've looked that up, and I believe AIX does support fastpoll, so it's only DEC and SGI that do not support fastpoll. The other operating systems, you should be able to set fastpoll equal to 1 and take advantage of the newer, faster polling, if that's actually an issue for you. Another enhancement that we've made is that we will avoid doing hash joins if the first row's optimizer directive is used. It turns out that what we found is that if you're optimizing your query, there's two ways that you can optimize queries. You can optimize them for how fast the first row of data is returned, or you can optimize pretty much for how fast the total set is going to be returned. What we found is that when we were using the first row's directive, we were always setting up to do a hash join. For returning the first row, this was not optimal. What really should have been getting used was an index nested loop join. The reason for this is that the overhead of the hash join was too high, and it made the time it took to return the first row too slow. So we've changed this to use nested loop join now in the case of when first row's optimizer directive is being used. All right, moving on to slide number 38. We've improved the memory management, especially when large amounts of shared memory are being used, for instance, greater than 20 gigabytes. So in the old method, what would happen is that a thread within IDS would request a block of memory, and IDS would try and go and find a best fit for that block. So let's say you're asking for 100 bytes. It would scan memory trying to find a block that was exactly 100 bytes, or the closest block that was, you know, greater than or equal to 100 bytes. And if you have a lot of memory, this obviously is going to take a very long time, if especially when the block you're asking for there's no perfect fit. So IDS has been enhanced so that each CPU VP will have its own cache of free blocks. And what IDS will do is search within this free block list. Now it maintains this free block list in buckets of sizes, and so by doing this, it shortens the amount of data that it actually has to look through in order to find a good fit. There is a config variable that can be set to determine how big this cache is for each CPU VP. You can disable it by setting VP memory cache to 0. Alternatively, you can set it to a non-zero number. Now, the one thing you should be aware of is that the total amount of memory cache should really be no more than your than 40% of the total amount of memory on your system. And so the calculation you want to do is take the number of VPs that you have, CPU VPs, and divide that into 40% of the shared memory total. And that's the absolute max of the VP memory cache that you should be using. Typically, you'll probably want to use less than this. This feature can also be turned on dynamically with the on mode minus WM function call that's listed here on the slide. Another thing that was done is we improved the performance for when the single CPU VP has been set in the config file. So the intent was that you want to be able to specify whether you're optimizing your system for multi-CPU performance or single CPU performance. Now, in a previous release, we had attempted to do this, and we managed to increase the performance of multi-CPU slightly at the detriment of single CPU. So we have corrected this, and now by setting single CPU VP, you will actually get performance that should be better than if you do not have this set. So we've fixed the performance problem with the single CPU VP configuration parameter. It's still used the same way. You still set it to the same values to turn it on and off. It just will now actually improve your performance. We've also improved performance in bitmaps. There's a variable for turning on additional refinements to the memory algorithms that are used by each of the CPU VPs mentioned in the first bullet on this page. IFX sort pools is the config parameter that you would use to turn this on. It pretty much goes hand in hand and is incorporated with the first bullet. It's pulled out here because there were actually two aspects to fixing the memory problems. The last bullet item on this slide refers to the handling of range predicates. What this is saying is that previously, if you had the following predicate where you had a column greater than or equal to some value and less than or equal to the same value, this really meant that you were looking for that value exactly. Because you cannot. That's the only values that are going to qualify that predicate are ones where the column equals X, as I've said here in the slide. So we now have changed the code to detect this situation and replace the range part of the predicate as to be a single equality statement. And as it says here on the slide, this had some dramatic performance improvements on several queries. It used to take over 50 seconds and reduced the time down to about 10 seconds. So this was a fairly easy one to do and had very very good results. Moving on to slide 39 and continuing with the bond benchmark performance improvements, another thing that we've done is we've improved the way that start and stop keys are used in query predicates. It used to be that if you had a multi-key index, so you had an index on columns A, B, C, and D, that we would only add filters up to the first range. So in the example that I've given here on the slide, with A equal to 2, B greater than or equal to 1, B less than or equal to 7, it would add those two filters and then not provide filters for the rest of the statement, for the C less than or equal to 10 and C greater than or equal to 10 and C less than or equal to 20. By not providing the additional filters, quite a bit of functionality of performance was lost. With the enhancements for the bond benchmark, now all the columns in the predicate will get examined, even the ones that follow the first range predicate. One of the side effects of this is that if this optimization, if this has taken place, there are going to be new. There's going to be new information in the SQ, in the explain output file. Where it used to say key first filters, you will now see that it says index key filters. So that's one thing to be aware of with this. And finally, the last feature I'd like to talk about in the Bond benchmark performance enhancements is the ability is the improved performance when we're using many prepared statements. So previously, what would happen is that at the end of a transaction, the IDS goes through and needs to close any prepared statements that had been left open to the end of the transaction. Now, the problem is that it was not selective about what it looked at. So if you had hundreds of prepared statements and the transaction that's closing only used one of them, IDS would still go through and examine every single prepared statement to determine whether or not it needed to be closed. With this enhancement, what will happen is that IDS knows which statements were actually used within the transaction and will only examine those to determine whether or not there's any cleanup that needs to be done. So in the example I gave there where you have hundreds of statements in your application and only one, it would only examine that single statement to determine whether or not it needs to be cleaned up. So that's all that I was going to cover for the Bond benchmarks and XC2 through XC5 feature enhancements. At this point, I think I'm going to go back and there was a request to cover the some of the information that was covered in a previous chat with the lab, which is how to migrate from 7. And some of the features that are in V10. Now, I'm going to try to go through these fairly quickly since many of you have already seen them. I'll try to cover these slides in about 15 minutes, and then we'll go to Q&A. So let's move back to slide number 4. This is the slide that's labeled Why Upgrade. Now, remember these slides, when it's saying V10, the context of these slides is UC1. So here in this first slide, on slide 4, it shows some of the things that have been added since 7, things such as detached indexes and fuzzy checkpoints in 9.2, update statistics, dynamic logging in 9.3, buffer manager and so forth in 9.4, and then the configurable page sizes in 10 and table level restore. So obviously a lot of work has gone into IDS since 7. All these features have had high customer demand and are really distinguishing features of why you would want to move from 7 to 10. Moving on to slide 5, you can see the ways in which you would need to migrate. If you're on 9.1 currently, you would migrate to 9.3. And then on to 10, if you're on 7.2, 4, 2.3, 2.2, you have to upgrade to one of the 7.3 servers, and then on to 10. At this point, as far as I know, most people seem to be on 7.2.4. If you're on a 7 server, it's probably a 7.2.4, 7.3, or 7.3.1, in which case you can upgrade directly to Dynamic Server 10. Moving on to slide 6. These are the steps that you need to cover whenever you do an upgrade, basically. Well, the other thing I should mention in slides that I should have mentioned previously is that 9 and 10 is also going to give you all the extensibility features. So a few of the things that I mentioned in the slides earlier, such as the MQ data blade, the binary data types, and so forth, those features are also only going to be available in 10. Obviously, you can take advantage of the other extensibility features we have, such as spatial data blade, the geodetic data blade, time series, and Excalibur text. Those sorts of things are all only available in 10. So moving back to slide 6 here, steps for conversion. There's a number of migration steps we'll go over quickly. We'll talk about how you go through the steps necessary to upgrade. First thing on slide 7 is that there's a certain disk space requirements and RAM requirements. You need 500 megabytes of disk space, 256 of RAM. You need to plan for all the additional space that you're going to need, such as schema, temporary tables. Make sure you have enough CPUs. You should probably have about 20% breathing room on the amount of disk space that you use. Moving on to 8. You should make sure that your root chunk has at least 10% space free. You have 3,000 free pages of logical log space to rebuild SysMaster. About 2,000 K of free space per database for each per each DB space that you're upgrading. Partition header should not be full, and you can check this with uncheck minus ME. You can use that to compress your extents. And then there's listed here is a query that can be used to determine how much space is actually going to be needed. Moving on to slide 9, here's the migration checklist. You should run all your queries through setExplainOn. This is a good way to determine what queries are actually doing. You can run the DB schema minus D minus HD for all your critical tables. It'll tell you about the distribution. Run some onCheck. All the things here are preparing so that you know what you currently have, what you're running, and gives you the ability to check the database once it's been upgraded to make sure that everything's working appropriately. Moving on to slide 10, there's a number of things that you're going to want to do on your database. Make sure all transactions are closed. You need to get rid of your in-place alters, verify the integrity of the data that you have. You want to stop ER, flush the queues, disable the HDR servers, take a level 0 archive backup. And if you're running on Unix or Linux, there may be some modifications of kernel parameters that you're going to want to do, such as shared memory and so forth. And verify that before you start the upgrade, you've got to make sure that your current instance is offline. The installer for V10 can be invoked in several ways. I'm now on slide 11. There's the install server, which is the preferred way. You can specify the location for your Java if you want to use a local Java rather than one that's supplied. Or you can run it by hand with a Java command. And there's also the minus legacy option. If you're running on Linux, then there's RPM packages that you can use, and this has been available since 9.4.0. Moving on to slide 12, there are a number of files listed here that you will need to look at and make sure that they are up to date. So you'll need to update the unconfig file and so forth. As you can see here, there's several files here. Make sure they all have the right information in them. You're going to need to set some environment variables, the Informix server, onconfig. Make sure your path has the bin directory in it, and Informix XQL host is another one that you'll need to set. Moving on to slide 14, all you need to do at this point then, once everything else has been done, is start the Informix Dynamics server. And it will go through, it'll look at the disks that you were previously using, and it will update them in place. And once you get a message saying conversion is completed successfully, you're done. Informix now, you now have version 10 running against your what used to be your version 7 database. So really, the other than setting up the environment variables and taking some precautionary steps, the level of effort is really just to take install server version 10, set up the onconfig and various other files to point at the seven installation, and then start up version 10, and it will do the rest of the work for you. After you've done the upgrade, you can check things. You'll need to do things like update your statistics to make all the indexes get used. You'll probably want to run on-check to make sure that to verify the integrity of your data. You'll have to do some work with OnBar, turn on HDR and ER, and do any performance tuning that you want to do. Make an initial backup of the dynamic server. All these are fairly obvious things, but they all should get done. You can also migrate using replication. This is possible. The problem is that it's fairly complicated to set up, and if you're using ER replication, the only thing you're replicating is our tables. On slide number 17, we have a list of the new keywords that have been added for each of the versions. You can see here there's the 9.1, 2, and 3 keywords, 9.4, and then things that have been added to 10. Missing from this list are the new keywords that have been added for XC2, 10 XC2 through XC5, things like first and skip are not on here. The reason that you'll probably want to know about these is that if you were using one of these keywords in one of your queries, then you will probably need to update your query in order for it to not get a syntax error. Moving on to slide 18, there are several application migration things that you'll want to be aware of. You know, you'll want to upgrade your applications to the latest version of CSDK, and you may want to use things like PAM for authentication, since it would be now that it's available in 10. You can upgrade to the newer versions of ODBC, .NET, and Java. And there's some additional enhancements you'll need to do on your 4GL applications as well. All right, I'm going to move to slide 20 here. I'm going to go through these rather quickly since I think many of you have already heard the enhancements that have been done for UC1, but I'll mention some of the highlights again. I'm on slide 20. First and foremost is that by going to IDS 10, you are going to be getting a big performance improvement. Typical is 8 to 15%, and even much more depending on what the queries are that you're running. A lot of work has gone into to 10 to improve performance, and I think that's something that you would definitely notice. Other features that were added into 10 UC1 is better fuzzy checkpoints. We have a shared statement cache rather than a per connection. We found that when you had it per connection and you had lots of applications issuing the same statements, that memory would tend to grow rather large, since you would have the same statements cached for every single connection. Now there's one global statement cache. There's a better buffer management system that's been added, which combines the great victim selection that IDS has with DB2's ability to minimize the amount of I/O that you have to do. We've improved the B-tree scanner so the delete performance is much improved. We've improved the replication performance up to 50% faster now. We've made many optimizer improvements, increased rollback speed, better hash join. The list is fairly long as far as the performance improvements go. Moving on to slide 24, we have a few things that we've done to simplify administration, and here's the list. We're able to now run recovery on non-identical systems. We can make full use of tapes, whereas previously, if you had if you were backing up the tape, and you had a number of different lengths of tape, you had to specify the lowest, the smallest of all the tapes, or else all the tapes basically had to be the same size. So the way that you would do that is pick the smallest one, and then you'd end up wasting the rest of the tape. Now it's possible to have the writes go to the IDS determines the end of the tape and does the appropriate thing so that you can use tapes of different size. You're able to rename chunks during restore. We have a new installer. We no longer put libraries in userlib. You can determine the order that things get installed in. It's possible to add new chunks even if chunk zero is completely full. We've enhanced onstat to display environment variables and list of all prepared statements. You can turn on explain dynamically. We've done additional log management, dynamic lock allocation. There are a number of things to improve to simplify administration. Moving on to slide 25, we've also enhanced a number of things for application development. You can see a number of them on this slide. There's support for long identifiers. We've updated our Unicode support. Previously, we were using we had our own built-in Unicode support. With 10, we've upgraded to use IBM's ICU library, the International Components for Unicode. This library is vastly superior to the one we were using before, and supports the latest Chinese and other national standards for character sets. So that's a big improvement. We've now added support for sequences. You can have triggers on selects and views. Order by non-select list. We support ANSI SQL 99 joins. We have describe input. We allow unions and subqueries. We can name our return values. You can have multiple out parameters on your user-defined functions. We have better support for long character strings, and we have multi-nationalization. Moving on to slide 26, we have done a number of things to improve the extensibility of 10. We've added collections, which have always been there. They've been improved now. We've added table functions, which allows you to create a function that returns a set of rows, and then you're able to select from that set of rows. So select star from a function is what it really gives you. We have the virtual table interface. The virtual table interface is this interface that MQ uses that allows you to take an external data source, such as maybe a flat file or something like a queue or really just about anything, and make it appear as if it were a table. In addition to the virtual table interface not listed here, we also have a virtual index interface, and that allows you to do a similar thing with creating non-standard indexes on your tables. So things like document search indexes would be an example of a virtual index. We've added user-defined type support. That support continues to be enhanced. We've got a number of high-performance programming support with internal API with external APIs, which customers can call, both in C and Java, and many built-in functions in the server for handling complex data. And moving on to slide 27, to mention a few things, we had upgraded to CSDGate 2.9. We've done JDBC enhancements. And for WAS integration, so we're now able to integrate with more WebSphere products. We have OLAdB enhancements, ODBC enhancements, ESQLC enhancements, and finally, we have a native .NET provider. At this point, that is all the slides that I have for today. So I'll turn it over to the speaker, to the operator, and get questions.
Thank you. Before we take your questions, we would like to conduct a brief electronic survey. After I finish reading the entire question and all of the possible responses, please answer by firmly pressing the star key, followed by the number on your touchtone phone that corresponds to your choice. If you are using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Question one, the level of technical detail in this presentation was, for about right, press star one, not technical enough, press star two, too technical, press star three, and we'll pause just a moment to give everyone a chance to signal. Question two, the speaker for this teleconference was, for excellent, press star one, good, press star two, fair, press star three, poor, press star four, and again, we'll pause just a moment to give everyone a chance to signal. Question three, overall teleconference rating. For excellent, press star 1. Good, press star 2. Fair, star 3. Poor, star 4. Again, we'll pause just a moment. And question 4. Would you like someone from IBM to contact you regarding IDS version 10? Press star 1 for yes, star 2 for no, and we'll pause just a moment. Thank you. Now we'll move to your questions. If you'd like to ask a question or have a comment, press star 1 on your touchtone telephone. Again, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Again, press star 1 for questions or comments. And we'll go to Anthony Warner.
My first question has to deal with XC5. I cannot find it anywhere to download off of a Passport Advantage site.
Right. I should have mentioned we're in the process of bundling it up right now, and it should be available fairly shortly.
Another quick question. I just contacted the help desk last week because I thought the SDK was bundled in with IDS install now.
Right.
They're not aware of that either.
Oh, it is bundled with it.
I had heard such, and I wanted to confirm it, and the help desk said, no, it's not.
So I'll have to look into that because it should be bundled there, and that may just be some missing information on their part.
All righty. The very last question I had here was, when migrating to, let's say, 9X or 9.4 to 10, are we going to have an additional 20% need for disk for growth, or is that only from version 7?
That's only from version 7.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
We'll go next to Len. Len? And Lynn, your line's open. Please.
Hello.
Please go ahead.
Hi. Hi. This is Lynn. I have two questions. First, is the backup and restore compatible between 9.4 FC3 and 10.0 FC1?
From which one? From 9.4 to
9.3 and 10.0. Is the backup and restore compatible between those two versions?
Yes, I believe it is.
They are?
I believe so. Yes. Yeah, they should be.
Even with the replication, is that matter whether we use replication or not? Because
yeah.
We seem to have problems, restore 9.3 backup into 10.0 version.
Really? What sort of problems are you having? Are you getting an error, or it works, but it doesn't seem to have the correct data once you're...
For the detail error, I have to go back. Is there any way I can follow up with you the questions?
Yes. Probably the best... The first thing is, have you contacted technical support about this?
Not yet.
They're probably the first place. I mean, there may be, it's been a while since I've had to try to do something like that. So there may be some aspects that I'm just forgetting. I mean, there's a way to do it. I would have thought that it's transparent and it just works, but there may be some additional step. I'd suggest you talk with technical support, and if that doesn't work, then if you don't get an answer there, they will definitely forward your questions to me.
Okay. The second question is, if we have a, dual core processor, one processor but it's dual core, should we treat it as multiple CPUs in the configuration, or should we treat it as one CPU in the configuration?
If you have one CPU and you're on 10, you should treat it as one CPU. If you're on 10 XC5, before that, I would say that you should not set the single CPU. Environment configuration variable.
But it's a dual core.
Dual core. So in that case, you probably should set the multi CPU.
You should set multiple CPU. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Sure.
We'll go next to Malcolm Whelan.
Kevin, I'm
yes.
interested in the on-check minus ME command. I've yet to find a system on which that command is supported. In fact, I was told, I've been trying to find the emails, but I can't find them at the moment, by Jonathan Leffler and Madison Pruitt, that this is not a supported feature.
Really?
Yes.
That's interesting. I will have to look at that, because when I look through our internal systems to find out what features are implemented and how they were implemented, this comes up several times.
Yeah, it's in the documentation. It tells you in the documentation to use it. I've tried to use it a number of times and never found it available.
All right, let me look into that, because it may be that it's the functionality is there, but the parameter is specified incorrectly. But on the other hand, if you've talked with Jonathan and Madison, they would be in the best position to know.
Yeah.
So I tend to think maybe it's not yet implemented.
Yeah, I've also been told that you can't take a backup tape from 9.3 and restore it to anything greater than 9.3, because there's a structure change in the system from 9.3 to 9.4.
I see.
Yeah.
All right. So that's probably that's something that the tech support guy should be able to let Lynn know then.
Yeah.
We'll go next to Zev Brezen.
Hi. First, thanks, Kevin, for a real great presentation.
Sure, thanks.
Second, some of the questions actually Malcolm just raised, I had that question about OnCheck/me. I use it on the 7.31 version when I set RAS help to 1, and it works fine. But I've been told that it won't work on the IDS 10 version.
Okay, well, that's good to know. So it sounds like the consensus is that command is not available on 10.
Yeah, and actually that was my question, why not? It's like such a great feature, like why can't we have it on 10?
Yeah, that's a good point. I can look into that.
Also about the archives, if I would have a 7.31 archive and try to, let's say we upgrade to IDS 10 and then have logs on 10, but skip doing an archive right after the upgrade. So I'll just have like an level zero archive from 7.31 and the logs from IDS 10. And then could I go back like uninstall or reinstall 7.31 over 10, apply the archive and apply the 10 logs, or will the 10 logs be totally non-compatible?
I don't know the answer to that, to tell you the truth. I guess I probably don't want to hazard a guess. But, yeah, I don't know. Again, that's probably support should be able to answer that. If not, then you can you could let me know, and I can track down the answer to that.
All right. I suppose that would be the reason why, I mean, it's the most safe to do a level zero archive right after a migration to 10?
Yes.
All right.
Yes.
And just one final note. On slide 18, you mentioned that 4GL, if you have any 4GL applications after migration to 10, you would have to recompile all those 4GL applications.
Right.
Except if you have 7.32.UC3 tools.
Right.
I'm wondering if that also applies to 7.32.FC3 tools.
Yeah, it should. I think that should have said XC3 rather than UC3.
Okay, thank you once again for a wonderful presentation.
Sure.
We'll go next to Jacob Solomon.
Yes, hi, Kevin. Thanks.
Hi.
I wonder if Malcolm was working for the same company as I am. Malcolm, I installed my first release 10 installation a few weeks ago. We created two of them. I was very disappointed to see the LBU preserve had been deprecated. Okay. For starters, we had run into a problem. Somebody turning on the system all the way, like turning on the speakers all the way. Where the files got the file logs filling up so quickly that there was no chance to do a checkpoint, and the physical log was very large, so that did not fail to trigger a checkpoint. The upshot of that was that the dynamic logs parameter was not working. Okay, now someone's tried to create a bug for it. Well, they've been unable to replicate the problem. That's besides the point. But something that would have prevented this would be if LBU preserve were still an operational parameter.
I see. What version were you installing?
This was 10. I forget UC what. It would take me a few minutes to open a window on that one, so I'd rather not keep everybody waiting while I do that. But I think it's one of the early 10 versions.
Okay. Well, I'll take the LBU preserve recommendation. See what we can do about that.
For clarification for anyone who's listening, the reason I was using LBU preserve was in case the logic logs got filled. There apparently are other functionalities for it that I wasn't aware of, but the main thing I was concerned about is if logic logs are about to get full. If you have 40 logs, if you filled up 39, all user activity will stop, and only rollbacks and other management things can take place. That would have been perfect for my situation. Because I could have rolled back the transaction, I could have stopped some things from happening, and there would have been the logs would not have been able to fill up completely. So LBU preserve is, in my opinion, a very, very needed parameter. It should not have been deprecated.
Okay. All right. Great. That's good to know.
We'll go next to Eugene Seidlin.
Hi.
Hi.
I have questions. We did testing for on Solaris 64-bit, we test IDS-10, and we have serious problem with performance of replications because it was worse than we used 9.3 previously.
Mm-hmm.
And performance, the first thing, performance was not so good. And second, they have a problem. It's a performance degradation after some period of time when it's X amount of transaction did go, like 3-4 hours is going, and after that performance started dramatically degraded, like 3x.
So let me see if I understand this. They were on 9.3. They were using enterprise replication. You upgraded to 10, and you saw the performance.
Yeah, we upgrade two things. We upgrade Solaris from Solaris 8 to Solaris 10. And from 9.3 IDS to 10.0 IDS.
Okay, and so when you were on Solaris 8 and 9.3, the performance was fine.
Yes.
And when you upgraded to 10, You did both simultaneously, upgrading to 10 and going to Solaris 10.
Right. We just did verification before we try go this approach. And when we figure out that there's problems with replication, I opened a few tests for a few cases, but issue wasn't resolved, and replication performance with use enterprise replications, it's much slower than we had before.
All right, so you're working this through, you've opened up a case, and...
Yeah, but it's not resolved. We dropped the project because it's no way to go to the direction for now.
Right, I see. Well, I'll check with the enterprise replication team and see what they have to say, if they're aware of this problem. I haven't heard of this problem before, but it's, you know, if there's... When you were talking with support, was it clear how to cause this problem to come up? Was there a reproduction information included?
In support, guys, they have not boxes, so they monitoring a reproduce problem in our boxes. They log into our system.
I see.
They create some patches with X3, I believe. But it's better than it was in first release, but still sucks.
Okay.
Unfortunately.
All right. Okay. Well, great. I'll talk to the team and see what they say.
Yeah, the problem is it looks like my question is because the engine it never was compiled under Solaris 10. It's compiled under 8 and 55 for 10.
I see.
And nobody have in technical support. They have not environment to do internal reproduce with Solaris 10 and IDS 10 together.
Yeah, so, that's a problem. Trying to find all the various combinations of platforms.
Understood, but it's kind of, you know, we try to go to bigger server with multiple CPUs, and plus it's some issues with multiple CPUs. So kind of fuzzy. It never was before we work with IDS at least 10 years. And this latest release kind of fuzzy to us. We never had this issue previously.
Right. Well, let me talk to the team and see what they have to say.
Thanks a lot. If you send me emails, it'll be great.
Sure.
We'll go next to Debbie Butler.
Hi, Debbie.
Hi. My question is regarding your the truncate function and user-defined types.
Yeah.
Your comment was that if they had assign and destroy functions, it would revert to the old way. My question is regarding your standard blade, specifically the video data blade.
Right.
How do I know if they have assign and destroy functions defined? We're using video, web, and Excalibur.
Video, web, and Excalibur.
But I specifically would want it for video.
Yeah, the web blade certainly does not have them. You can look them up. There's a sys table that tells you what all the functions are defined. You're looking for a function called destroy, D-E-S-T-R-O-Y is the name of the function, and it takes a single argument, which is the data type that is in the table that you're going to be truncating. So if you find that function in there, then it's going to revert to the slower delete performance. And if you don't find that function, then it's going to go quickly.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. We'll go next to Swanhai Carmichael.
Hi, this is Swanhai Carmichael.
Hi.
I just have a question. That is there any training that we need to take as a DPA for conversion from IDF 7.3?
I'm sorry, you kind of faded out there. Could you repeat your question?
Is there any training that we need to take as a DBA for a conversion of IDF 7.3.1 to 9.4 or 10? Are we just on our own?
Yeah, that's a good question. I'm not sure if there's additional training. There's certainly classes on lots of aspects of Informix. I would imagine that there's a class that goes into detail of all the features and functionality in 10 and in 9. I'm not sure if there's an actual class on the upgrade on doing. Are you interested in the upgrade, or are you interested in what are the new, you know, going into more detail on the actual new functionality?
We are doing the upgrade in this summer, like the end of July or August, from 7.3.1 to at least 9.4.
Okay.
And on top of that, we also moved from 264 OS to the HPUX 2. So there are several things that's new to us. So that's, I just wonder, is there any training or something like that?
Yeah, I don't know off the top of my head, but
I guess,
you know,
I can call tech support and ask.
Yeah, you can talk to tech support. The other thing is, if you just go to the IBM website, there you can pretty easily. What's
right.
that?
So we can search for the training.
Yeah, there's educational classes that are listed in the in the public IBM site that you should be able to find.
All right, thank you.
Sure.
We'll go next to Harry Johnson.
Hi, Harry. Hi, how are you?
Fine.
Great. You mentioned that there is a marked improvement of over 7.3.1. One of the complaints of my clients is that when we took them from 7.3.1 to 9.4, there was a dramatic decrease in performance. So are you saying that the 10, the 9.5, I guess, is much greater than the 9.4 in performance?
I guess we'd need to know what the queries are that they're running. You know, our experience has been that if you upgrade from 7 to 9.4, that you do get better performance. But certainly going from 9.4 to 10, there is going to be additional performance. I mean, there's at least another from 9. There is additional performance improvement from 9.4 to 10 on the order of, say, 10%, something like that. But if you're, you know, if you're seeing orders of magnitude, then that's...
Yeah, that's, as a matter of fact, Mark Scranton and Dan Farrell and I all went to this client to try to figure it out, and it definitely was a decrease in performance. It's Panamation client.
Okay.
And,
now, did you go as far as to compare plans to see if it's actually preparing the same?
Oh yeah,
executing the
same? It sure was. Yeah, we did that. So, but I'm glad to hear that there's an performance increase. My clients will be happy to hear that.
Yeah, there is. Going from 9.4 to 10, you'll see a performance improvement, and you know, then the next question is. Yeah, I mean, I'm surprised to hear that it's got this, when you do the explain, you see the same query plan, because I would have thought that, you know, usually when you have performance problems like that, it's because it's executing a different plan and you're not making use of indexes or something.
Right.
But if they're identical, it's kind of hard to, and the data is identical, it's kind of hard to imagine what could be going wrong there.
Right. Well, that was our feeling too. But
have you did you place any bug reports or anything like that?
Oh yeah. Okay. We got around some of the problems by going back to the basics and pulling the sorts areas out on drives by themselves, things we did in the past. That's the only way we could get it to perform as good as the 7 engine did.
I see.
Yeah. So it was quite a shock to us too.
Yeah, I'd be interested to find out what's going on there. That's
right.
That's strange.
Okay.
Yep.
Well, thank you.
Sure.
And due to time constraints, this will conclude the question and answer session. I'd like to turn the conference back over to Kevin Brown for any additional or closing comments.
No, I just want to thank everyone for joining the call today. I enjoyed talking with you all, and you can reach me at kbrown3@us.ibm.com if you have any further questions. I'd be happy to look into that. And I guess the final word is that if you have the opportunity and you're able to, you should try to attend the Information on Demand conference in Anaheim in October. That's it.
Thank you. This will conclude today's conference. Thank you for your participation. You may now disconnect.